Okay, ladies and gentlemen, before we kick off this podcast, it's probably a good opportunity just to say that we do have a raffle ongoing today. It wasn't one that we had planned from the outset. It really is just get together and celebrate Teletext. But one of the things that we have is a Facebook group. And we're lucky enough to have about 350 members on there, and they all have a look at what we can share. And it's not a particularly serious group, although it can be. And we get things like TFAX as a result of it, and we celebrate the fact that we all have a common interest. One of our members lives in Japan by the name of Kara Moon, and he helped us when we first got the Facebook group going. He then went quiet, and then he deleted his account, and then he came back, and I had a private message very recently saying, oh, it's me again. I'm in Japan at the moment. I've been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, which is a bit of a bombshell because, as we all probably know, we've got friends on the internet that we'll never meet. We'll never meet them. But to actually know that you'll never, ever meet them is quite sad. So his sister, who lives in New York, has raised a Just Giving page to try and raise some money for him to get a bit of therapy just to make his pathway a little bit more comfortable, because the Japanese health insurance covers some things but not others, and one of the things that he's been diagnosed with that he's trying to raise money for would really help him and his family manage the challenges he's got at the moment. So what we've got today is a raffle. And it's just things that I've had a look round at, around my house. Mr. Biffo's had a look round his house. He doesn't have many interesting things at all. If you could just buy some raffle tickets, or if you're not interested in winning the prize at all, just pop some money in the Mr. Biffo suggestion box. We'll get the money sent up to the... We'll donate that money to the Just Giving page, and that will help Kara Moon's family out, hopefully. So the prizes are a really crap remote control with red buttons on it. So if you press red, you can't go wrong. And it will be added with signatures that you can facsimile and put on checks later on. So that will have all the signatures from anybody of any note by the end of the day. So that will be an investment and an heirloom for the family to be passed through. Peter, it was Peter about to talk. Peter, your palm tree, can we sell that? No, you want to keep that? We want to raffle it off. Okay. Yeah, palm tree. Second prize, I did another podcast for Retro Video Gamer, and they send you gear through, and I've played this once, and I did a very average album review. The album's not average, my reviews are average. And that's Red Vinyl, Streets of Rage, only been played once. It's got the cards in it and the prints. You won't get the cards anymore if you order it, because that was a special limited edition. So for price of a raffle ticket, you could be walking off of that. Star prize, if you can get it in the car, is my mate Clubber. So just buy a strip and we'll see what we can do, send something off. He's one of us really, because he loves Teletext, and he gave a damn and joined our group. Okay, so that's me done on that bit. That's the PR bit done.
I'll just add one more prize. A Teletext kit to add to your Raspberry Pi in a gold organza bag.
Gold.
Hey, yes.
Orgasna bag. That's a bag. That's a really good bag. That's orgasmic. That's the PR bit over and done with.
Is it really? Because have you mentioned our sponsors?
Our sponsors, OBS. Yes, I haven't.
Well, would you like me to read the spiel again?
Ich spiel again for Spiel.
Ich spiel.
Ah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, please do, Dan.
Yeah, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Open Broadcast Systems, who provide broadcast software for video and audio transport using off-the-shelf IT equipment. If you have an outside broadcast, they are the guys to contact. Also, if you need to run Teletext subtitles, give them a call or visit obe.tv, that's obe.tv, and mention the Teletext Fest, and I'm sure they'll give you a good deal.
Oh, that was good. Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brilliant. Good stuff. Right. Okay. Right. So, welcome along, everybody. Gosh, it's another full room. I'm glad you all don't turn up when I'm doing a podcast in my own house, in my own room. Although, I shall have this image the next time I do one. I think, God, I've got to be good. So, without further ado, shall we kick off Teletext R, Podcast R, episode 5.2 or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what number we're up to.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
It's 888.
Lovely. Relevant. Okay. Yeah, we hope you've suitably refreshed and ready for more Teletext stories. The second show, we'll delve into the pixels, into the not-so-secret life of digitizers, contributors. And with us now are two familiar faces, Violet Berlin and the one and only Mr. Hares, also known as Tim Moore.
So would you like me to read my pre-scripted introductions for our guests?
I've not seen that bit there, was it?
Because I...
Sponsors again first.
Yes.
Obviously. Oh, yeah. Yes, you see.
Because this show is certainly not scripted. None of it is. But yes... We'll start with Violet Berlin, because ladies first. Violet Berlin is the acclaimed presenter of numerous children's and video game TV shows, including the one that was a great big advertisement for the Quick Shot Supervision, which you may remember. Oh, no. And...
Groan.
And Tim Moore, sitting to my right, is the acclaimed author of numerous travel books, including one about the time he journeyed through Spain on his ass.
Woo!
Woo!
Maybe you'll be able to tell us more about that a bit later on.
I wonder how his ass is now.
Ass.
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 There's a difference.
Donkey. Ah, of course.
You just spoiled the joke.
Not for the first time, Dan. If you go back through the podcast, it's a litany of crashed punchlines. Okay, so before we start, we should state that we weren't allowed to talk about Digitizer itself, were we?
No.
Why was that, Dan?
Because all the Digitizer stuff is coming up this evening from 6 p.m.
Okay, right, so what am I doing?
I have no idea, Carl.
No, okay, you go, Dan.
Okay. I think we better start with some questions, because this is rapidly getting out of control, unfortunately. So, I think it's best to start with a question for both of you. And that's a very general question. What are your personal histories of teletext? Were you fans of the medium in the 80s and the 90s?
You've got a microphone there.
Okay. Well, of course, it was before the internet, so if you were hanging around at home and there wasn't anything on TV, there was a teletext to browse. And I have to admit, I wasn't particularly a fan of teletext until I discovered Digitizer on it, which I'm not allowed to talk about. But I did book a very good holiday via it, which I was talking to Tim earlier on, that I got a really, really uber cheap holiday to Bulgaria.
It was much better than the holiday I got from Tintagel. 4 nights in Tintagel in a really horrible house.
So yeah, we were comparing this earlier on, that Tim got his 4 nights in Tintagel via teletext holidays, which must have been one of the few holiday pages without a palm tree on it. And I got 2 weeks in Sunny Beach in Bulgaria with my friends, which was the biggest bargain going. And Tim's just been there about a few weeks ago. You just actually went to that place.
And there was no teletext was involved in
there. Oh, really? That's disappointing, because I thought places like that were full of pixelated palm trees.
Apart from that, I guess... When did Bamboozle start? Because that would always keep you coming back for more, wouldn't it?
Was it 1993?
Yeah,
Mr. Biffo might know this, but seeing as he's not... Oh, he's there. So we... Shh, don't mention anything about Digitizer.
We can talk about that, even though it happened on a desk mere feet away from where we were doing the D word. Yeah, they sat there doing their stuff. But Paul did all the pictures of Bamboozle. Mr. Bamboozle.
Okay, actually, I have a question here, Violet, relating to teletext. The teletext bit at the end of Bad Influence, the data blast, surely that was influenced by teletext.
I'm actually just trying to remember. I know how that came about. One of the first producers of Bad Influence, a guy called Richard Maud, it was his idea, but I think... I'm trying to remember where he... I just can't remember where he got it from. I don't think he came up with it, but he'd seen it somewhere or been told about it. And to have that data blast at the end, it felt so modern. People just loved it, and they just... I know loads of people did video record the show just in order to make sure everyone... Does everyone know what Data Blast was at the end of Bad Influence? Yeah, just everything crushed into very... Lots and lots and lots of pages played very, 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 very quickly, and then people could video it and do it on pause, play, pause, play, pause, play, to see loads of cheats. I do remember it was probably a massive pain filling that content every week to fit it all in. And it did stop, though, didn't it? After the first couple of series, I think we stopped doing it. Is that right? I can't even remember. Can anyone remember when Data Blast actually stopped on Bad Influence? It wasn't up until the third or fourth series. I think it was just the first couple. But it was very, very popular. So I guess it does have its DNA in teletext, for sure.
Okay. Do you know who might have designed that? Would it have been a teletext designer?
I think I could be wrong. I have a feeling we got the runner to do it.
Okay.
No, but that was the content. So who actually designed it? I just can't remember. You should have prepped me. I'd have come back with all the facts.
Weren't there different designs each series? Am I right in saying that?
For the graphic design, for the graphics.
For the Data Blast, yes.
For the Data Blast. Possibly, because the production team for each series, you'd tool up with, you know, you'd hire the production team for that contract. So it's possible, but really, really struggling to remember. I'd have to ask Richard, whose brainchild it was.
Is he here today?
No.
Oh, we'll get him back for the next teletext.
Okay,
fest.
All right, we'll do that.
I can pretend to be him if you like.
Yes, we could do that. So, Richard, tell us about the time you designed the Data Blast.
I just got the runners to do it.
So, Tim, while we've got you on the mic here, and I know you may have to shoot off very soon, so we'll get a few questions in for you here. We know that you've written quite a few books. You're an acclaimed author, as I mentioned in the introduction, but have you ever actually written about teletext or mentioned teletext in any of your books?
Well, yes, I have, actually, but probably in a way that, again, would fall under the category of things we're not supposed to be talking about now. But because I was fired in quite kind of gothic circumstances from Digitizer, I then used that in a quite ugly, I'll-show-you sort of way to go and do other things. And I think I maybe even dedicated the resulting book in a really sarcastic, aggressive way to certain members of the Teletext senior stuff. So yes, apart from that, no, I don't really... Teletext was clearly a massive deal if you were around at that time. But it's quite interesting because it obviously peaked and then they had its golden age of use and then just very suddenly, probably coincidence, just after I left, it suddenly all kind of seems to vaguely collapse. But no, the internet clearly killed it off, but it was... Yeah, you know, stuff like football results and weather and things. But what was interesting was how Teletext really made most of its money. It was all stuff like the betting tipsters. The holiday ads obviously was a big deal, but and the premium rate phone competitions and stuff. That was where they made their really big bucks. But yeah, it was a very sort of short-lived. It burnt brightly, but for 10 years or something, I suppose.
Okay, I was going to ask a question there, but it's bordering on digitizer stuff. Should I just ask it? It's Mr. Biffle. Were you familiar with Teletext before you joined Digitizer? Were you a heavy user, as it were?
No, not really, to be honest. Football scores and that kind of thing. I was quite amazed when I did apply, actually, I applied for a job at Oracle. Was that being right? It may have been. They were the predecessors. And I was quite intrigued that they actually had a sort of feature section. I thought, who the hell wants to watch features, like, you know, features on Teletext? But they had a fully fledged thing with all these, you know, youth sections and the music section, which I think I applied to be some of the editor of this music section, even though I didn't really actually know very much about music. But I thought, well, actually, you know, how many have we got? Like 8 characters per page or something. What can you possibly have to get wrong there? But yeah, then when I got a job at Teletext, they had loads of money actually because they were, you know, it was all paid for by the part of the Daily Mail group, and they had big bucks and they were recruiting a completely full team of everyone. I mean, there were, you know, loads and loads of massive office with hundreds of people working. Well, not hundreds anyway, a lot of people working there. Yeah. So, but I was still, yes, I went in there. I must have come up with some plausible bollocks, but I clearly didn't really know anything about, and I still want to say, like, really, does anyone actually watch this stuff? But when we first started getting the viewing figures in, I mean, obviously, like, it's a bit difficult really to say, did you happen to be sitting there and you kind of leant on your Teletext button and therefore, you know, read every single page that was on Teletext that day? But they, you know, nonetheless, I say this to my kids now, and they just think, like, you know, when I explain the phenomenon, they go, what? But it was, you know, everyone, it was millions and millions and millions of people, like, you know, 10, 20 million people, whatever it was, would look at it every week. And even Digitizer was 1.7 million, was it, or something like that? Anyway, it was an awful lot. And at first, we couldn't really take these figures seriously, but then we did started to get, you know, huge amounts of mail. And, yeah, so it was a big deal, but it kind of took me by surprise. I think probably we were slightly the exception that proved the rule, to be honest, because we were really popular, but none of the other feature sections really got any kind of mail or anything. But I could go on, but obviously we're supposed to be talking about this later. I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry, Paul. Carl, would you like to move on to another question?
Yeah, sure. So, Violet, say that the money was right and the conditions were right. You were to be invited to host a video games television show in 2016. What would you like it to be? Would it be similar to the ones that you've hosted in the past, or, you know, Games Master or something new? Maybe like a Top Gear or something like that?
I think I lived in an incredibly... I did my TV shows in an incredibly lucky period where... You know, it was very hard to get hold of footage of games. I mean, it cost us a lot of money, Bad Influence, to build the cables even, I think, to get into the consoles to get the footage onto the television and so forth. It was quite a feat to do that, and to even, you know, the games companies didn't just produce video of their games like they do now. I mean, nowadays, you can just see any trailer. I mean, the companies are all doing it for themselves. You can see what you want. You can go on YouTube and someone's made a... their own, you know, what do they call it, Let's Play video. You can get up-to-the-minute reports on the development of any game or what's going on. So I wouldn't see the point in doing something like Bad Influence or a video game show of news and views at the moment. I think there would be a lot of fun in doing something more interactive and doing something around kind of magazine show, like around the culture of games and gaming. But for something like that... I think you would just need to, like you say, like Top Gear, you just need the right... It has to come together from the right chemistry and the right people and the right writers. And people who are doing that are probably already doing their own show on the internet anyway. And anyway, no one watches TV anymore.
We could have the Top Gear of video games.
I was just saying, we'd open it out to the audience. Who would you have in your Top Gear version of a game show? Anybody got any ideas who they'd have as their presenters?
It's got to be Dominic Diamond,
Dominic Diamond?
Yeah. He's currently in Canada, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually. Hmm. Were you ever in touch with Dominic Diamond?
Yeah, I would see him around. That sounds funny. But, you know, at the odd event or whatever. We were once interviewed together for a magazine when I first got the job of Bad Influence, and it was kind of like, ooh, you know, Games Master versus Bad Influence. But we were, I think we weren't ever really, our shows were never really the sort of competitive shows that sort of perhaps it might have been made out, you know, I don't know, we got letters in the playground or in magazines and stuff like, which do you prefer? Because Games Master was a very different show. It was aimed, it was on Channel 4, it was aimed at very, it was just people playing against each other. It was like a game show, wasn't it? It was a very different audience. Their show was aimed entirely at, basically, I think, adolescent boys. That was the way they saw it. It was a niche show. Channel 4 were allowed to do niche shows. That's what Channel 4 was about, niche shows, wasn't it, from what I remember? And CITV, that we had to appeal to... We had to get half our audience girls, and we had to appeal to our age group, which was under 14s, or, you know, sort of children, basically, children's TV. We had to have 50% girls, or it wasn't, like... mainstream media, which is what we were aiming for. So we were a kid show, and to have this kind of Bad Influence versus sort of Games Master was a bit odd, but it did always feel a little bit funny. I'll admit, well, like when I did meet him, it was kind of a bit, oh hi, you're the other one, you know. And yeah, we just made small talk probably when we met. That was it.
Just a quick question: those kids on Bad Influence that did the game reviews, had they actually played the game beforehand? Or were they just going off something that they read in a magazine? Because sometimes it sounded that way.
Yeah. Okay. So the kids had played the games, and it was quite a job, I think, for one or two people to make sure they had all got the games and they'd all played them. But I think it was quite high pressured, you know, in the TV studio. Maybe if you're talking about how it came across, if they weren't sure or were sure. It's very, you know, you're sitting in, surrounded by cameras with like a big blue screen backdrop, probably on a stall with like cameras. You know, it wasn't just like casual filming we do now. It was a really big deal. And also we had 5 million viewers, Bad Influence. I mean, I take your 1.7 readers. but the point is that people watch television back then and they just don't now. So whether it was a kids' TV show or, you know, also on the television, because you were essentially, teletext was a TV show, wasn't it? I mean, you might have read it, but it was on your TV, and that's one of the reasons it was so popular. People just watched TV. So it was such a big deal to be on TV. I guess it was just quite hair-raising for them.
Yeah, I was being a bit cruel to the poor kids there. I hand that question up for the audience. But, Tim, were you a fan of Bad Influence?
I wasn't a 14-year-old girl as such. So, actually, to be honest, it was a pretty shameful on my part that when they sort of said that we wanted this video games thing, I didn't really know anything about video games. I still don't really know anything about video games. So kind of my presence here is utterly redundant. But there we are. Moving on from that slight handicap. No, I didn't really. I watched Games Master sometimes because I quite like the... there was a bit more kind of friction and sort of edge there. In fact, I think later on we might see some of that, aren't we? There was something in the one... Oh, okay. Anyway,
you can talk about it then.
Well, in fact, I'd forgotten it. I'd forgotten the details until I saw it. I won't talk about it. Sorry. There may or may not be. Yeah, you should. In fact, he should really be sitting here. But
we might ask him in a minute.
I've got to go check into my hotel. Also, I think I said I'll be there by 1 o'clock. But anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Carl. Welcome, New York. Feedback. Go on.
That's it. Okay, lovely. Well, in my pre-scripted questions here, Violet, have you ever been to Berlin?
I've been to Berlin many times, and I hoped to live in Berlin, but then I got a really good job, and so I didn't move. But I changed my name to Berlin. So.
What was it previously, if you don't mind us asking?
It was Wall. Wall.
Are you originally from Turkey?
Yeah, I changed it when the Berlin Wall came down in 1990 from Wall to Berlin. So that's how you yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it stuck.
That turned out to be a relevant question, a more relevant question than we could have ever hoped, because it was just...
But, on the subject of my name, I was a bit... When I became a TV presenter, when I first started presenting... Before Bad Influence, I did a show on children's BBC on BBC One, and I was ever so excited because you sort of end up doing these things, and you think, I never would have thought that, wow, I'd be presenting a show on BBC One. And then I realised with some sort of embarrassment that I had this ridiculous name that was a sort of name, you know, Violet Berlin, or some sort of flowery, florid name that would be a children's TV presenter, when only like a year earlier I'd been called Sarah Wall and had just changed my name for a laugh. And it stuck. So.
Do you think it works then?
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it?
Yes. We've got to change our names, Carl. What should we change our names to?
I don't know, really. So we've gone for the Berlin Wall. So what's happening at the moment? I don't know.
Trump Wall.
Cold Brexit.
Trump Wall, yeah. The Trump Wall.
Trump, yeah. Trump Wall. You could be actually Dan Trump. Dan Trump and Cole Brexit. And that'll cover it all, really. That'd be marvellous. Excellent. Okay, so, Tim, tell me more about your arse.
Ass.
Oh, it's a donkey. Sorry, yes.
It was a donkey, yes. Well, I think it's that I got kind of into this whole travel writing thing where you had to somehow... You couldn't just go away and talk about going on holiday. You had to go and do something a bit more demanding and a bit sillier, and there had to be some... mindless novelty shoehorned in for the sake of it. I quite like the mindless novelty shoehorning, but only one of them. I did this pilgrimage across Spain, and I thought I can. How? Well, actually, in fact, mainly I thought I really don't want to carry a bloody rucksack all that way.
Or a fridge on your back or anything like that.
Yeah, it was kind of on that spectrum, though. But so I thought, you know, this pilgrimage was obviously a medieval type thing, so it'd be quite authentic to have a medieval type animal. Even though I'm going to go and get a donkey. So I went down to the donkey sanctuary in Devon, wherever it is, who actually own 75% of all the donkeys in this country. So there are never, and they are supported because all these like little old ladies who remember seeing donkeys kind of beaten to death on beaches or whatever they used to do to them, they give all their money to the donkey sanctuary. But don't ever do that. Never give any money to the donkey sanctuary because there are no maltreated donkeys in this country. They're all living the life of Riley in this massive field outside Sidmouth. But when I went there and explained I was going to, I thought I should actually go. And I've actually got on my little wall at home a sort of certificate of donkey handling excellence, which sounds really bad, actually. But
you're excellent at handling donkeys. I like that.
What do you hear about the donkey? I said, well, I'm going to ride it across Spain. And they said, no, you're not going to do that. The maximum humane payload for a donkey is 50 kilograms.
That's all right.
Well, I'll sell that to Jesus. Jesus famously rode around on a donkey quite a lot, didn't he? So, but that didn't cuss it with them. So I had to. And then the donkey just carried my stuff. And also, well, I was going to. I thought that the great last chapter would be that I arrive at Santiago, and then what I would do with the donkey. I thought I'd kind of have a nice auction on the cathedral steps. But then I bonded with the donkey. And I thought of him being sold off to, like, you know, Mr. Chorizo factory man or something was bad. So I ended up paying the guy who sold me the donkey. I paid him about 1,800 euros to drive all the way from his farm in the Pyrenees to go and take the donkey away again.
That's war donkey for you, isn't it? That's amazing. That's really cool. So there's a donkopoly in the UK.
Yes, take that. That's the way you can take that away with you today.
Yep.
Don't give any money to donkeys.
Yeah, don't give any money to donkeys.
You might as well maltreat some because you know. It's, but that sanctuary's got to earn its bread somehow.
Okay, no, that's brilliant. So, do you have any more projects on the go then for travelling? Anything in abeyance?
By happy coincidence, I've got a book coming out this very Thursday. So
this Thursday, that's
of which
October.
Many as four copies are available outside on the desk there.
Excellent.
I cycled, actually, in fact, there's a bit of a Berlin Wall connection, because I cycled the entire route of the old Iron Curtain on an East German shopping bike. So that was 9,000 kilometres, and it took me a really long time and really hurt, and I was in a terribly bad way, particularly because I decided to go through Finland in the middle of winter, because I thought Finland's a bit boring, so I thought I'd make it interesting by going there in the winter, and it was a really, really silly idea.
It's just white, isn't it, I guess?
Yes, just
white and cold.
White and lonely,
hilly.
And with no people at all anywhere.
So, what was?
But they still do have teletext, ladies and gentlemen.
is that true? Do they?
Yes.
Right.
Wirely text.
Yes.
Well...
So what would you prefer then, an ass or a Eastern European bike for your next odyssey?
Well, I'm trying not to do any more because I've done quite a lot of bicycle related things, and in the same way that I'm a complete charlatan, don't know anything about computer games or teletext, I don't really know anything about cycling either, and I keep ending up doing all of the, I do like zero cycling for about 2.5 years and then go away and do like loads of cycling and come back again. But the people have the idea that I'm just topping myself up by, oh, I'm just a, you know, so I go to these events and talk about the cycling, people, all these massive cyclists turn up.
So you haven't had a booking at the donkey sanctuary yet then?
No, actually. And in fact, the Belgian hippie who sold me the donkey...
rode off on an Eastern European bike.
Yeah, he took exception to the way I portrayed his no-nonsense donkey training tips. And then my brother was going past his farm like the next year, and he said, like, I'm sorry, no, I don't want to have you or any mention of your brother here again.
Really?
Yes. Because, well, in fact, he was a really nice bloke, but he was a hippie, and he's a very, very sort of nice mellow chap, but, you know, donkeys are pretty famously so unreasonable and hard to get to do what you want them to do. And he said, so you must learn, the first you have just a few minutes to assert yourself. If the donkey does something you don't want it to do, you punch him in the stomach. Which, I mean, obviously I never did that at all. I was just like, well, no, I wasn't going to do that.
You never did the donkey punch?
This is
low hanging fruit.
It's a bit early for that. So I mentioned this. This is what he did, and he didn't like it.
Oh, well, thanks very much for the all that about donkeys.
I have to say, you did ask.
No, for sure, and it's absolutely brilliant. Cause it dovetails perfectly into a question I'll ask for Violet, because
this I've got to hear.
Because I want to know more about the quick shot supervision.
Okay, so is the quick shot supervision, you just wanted me to have to say that, is that the portable hand, was that the handheld thing that we had? Okay. So the reason that you perceive it to have been featured a lot was because it was in lots of pictures, or it was in shot back of shot a lot? Okay, so the reason they did that was because... one of the rules of making, you know, kind of TV shows on BBC and ITV, as you may well know, is to have kind of fair coverage, so you're not trying to, like, bias against anything. And it always was really difficult on anything I did, because there were two companies, it was like Nintendo and Sega, who were making all the games. And it just looked, and if we weren't careful, we would just look like one big advert for Nintendo and Sega. So you had to go absolutely out of your way if there was like a tiny little known console or another anything else in the market. You had to try and show there's more than this one or two things. And so probably when they found the quick shot, the supervision, they're like, yes, another one, and kind of got loads of them and were trying to look like we weren't, and you know, we were a bit more kind of even-handed about things. And so we somehow seemed to have a lot around. And I think there was one photo shoot where all those photos just got used quite a lot for years, and there just happened to be the photos with that handheld. Mm-hmm. And it had a funny kind of wrinkly bit, didn't it? It kind of bended, didn't it? Remember, well, it had kind of a screen that sort of bended around.
So did you use it? Did you use one to play games at all in the TV series?
When we were in the photo shoots, we were like playing whatever was on them, and there were loads around in the studios for all the kids who used to come and play all the games in the studios, mm-hmm. and there were other things as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we ever, I can't remember ever really doing much apart from them being there.
Thanks very much for
mystery
that.
Mystery solved.
Yes, thanks very much. That's cleared that up. So I don't think we've got any... quick shots being abused. 75% of them, at least, are all okay.
I didn't see one in the Museum of Computing History yet. So
I will throw that out. Then we'll need one there for the next time.
Get it sorted now.
But the quick shot supervision, I always thought that was a quick shot going in to see its boss, just to see how it's getting on its quarterly review.
Or maybe the quack shot supervision for the Mega Drive. Anyway, that is the end of the pre-scripted questions part. Thank you. But if you have any questions, you good people in the audience, we would love to hear them right now. Nobody? Oh, somebody over here?
You're talking about TV video game programs. So there's a good one called Video Game Nation. Unfortunately, it's just been cancelled, just like Teletext has, I guess. So, but anyway, that was a really good program. I mean, it was sort of a magazine type thing. It was mostly a review. But anyway, I think that was the best sort of mainstream video game TV program we've had for a while. But I don't think got very many viewers. I don't know if anybody else here saw it. No, there you go. Failed.
That was like hidden somewhere on a Sky EPG in like the 200s or the 300s, wasn't it? Sort of way.
Challenge TV.
Yes.
What about Go 8-Bit? Has anybody seen that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think a couple of people in the audience have, because I only started watching it the other week. It's good, but, you know, it says go 8-bit, then it's got a clear 16-bit intro, and you think, well, that's like, it's like, you know, a steam train program just with Formula One cars running around, isn't it?
Well, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Who's
yeah,
coming?
That's why I think
Dara?
It's absolutely fantastic.
Dara O'Brien? Oh, I asked him as well. I've been, camping outside his doorstep. Hand up in the back.
I'm a little bit old for the bad influence audience, but I'm just curious whether it was a supporting Teletext page, and if it did, were you at all involved in that on the production?
So just to repeat that for the recording, was there a supporting Teletext page for Bad Influence, and did you have any input into it?
There were TV listings on Teletext, obviously it would have been on that, but I don't recall it having a supporting Teletext page. But I wouldn't have been involved anyway. I mean, there was at one point a magazine for Bad Influence, which my picture was all over, but I didn't really have any, you know, they took some pictures and I did an interview and so did Andy. But, you know, we were spending our time making a TV show rather than all the other stuff around it.
Okay. Any more questions?
Are you still in touch with Andy?
Are you still in touch with Andy?
Via Twitter, like everything.
Oh, good. I'm pleased.
Sorry, Paul.
That's all right. Yeah.
Andy wasn't particularly into video games and stuff, and he did loads of shows at the time. I guess like he was doing What's Up Doc on Saturday mornings and Broom Cupboard and this, that, and the other. I mean, we did have arguments over which was better, Sega or Nintendo, of course. But apart from that,
but
yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, I was the Andy Crane.
Oh yeah.
Violet, sorry to interrupt.
He does the Weather Meridian, doesn't he? Yes.
Violet, sorry to interrupt, but you mentioned that Andy wasn't a big video games fan. Mm. Were you a big video games fan when you came to present Bad Influence?
Yeah, I was, yeah. I had a quick short supervision in my back pocket at all times.
She had several.
I was a big games fan, and the reason I was a games fan was because when I got my first TV presenting job, I presented for a year on very early satellite, so it was the Squareel, BSB. There was a Saturday and Sunday morning, 3-hour, both days, live show called The Core Cube, and nobody watched it. It was brilliant. So we got to, it was like practicing your piano practice in public. You know, it's like no one watched it. In fact, once I met a fan and that was it. And I got to present on it, and we had these 3 hours of airtime to fill twice a week. So I got given Joy of Joys, this strand to do, which was about video games. And I'd never really played video games. And I got to do reviews. And actually, it was my idea back then, because I hadn't got the time, really. I got kids to play the games, and I got kids in, and I got the kids to review the games. But I thought, oh, I can't just get the kids to do it and just ask some questions. They won't know what to ask. I better take this Nintendo and this Atari ST and all these consoles home and just check them out. And I just became completely hooked. And that's what got, you know, Castlevania did it to me on the NES. And that was, like, just the first moment that I realised that it was a dangerous thing. And then when I was out of work after that show, about a year and a half later, for about 6 months, I just basically had all these consoles from that TV show. And it was the undoing of me, yeah. And that's why, when I did Bad Influence, that's why I was recommended for the show, was because I played games.
Do you remember anything of Head to Head?
Of course I remember everything about Head to Head. That was my idea. That was like that.
Really?
Yeah, that was my
company.
Please
tell me about it, because I loved that show.
Yeah, I'm so pleased you did. I've met a Head to Head fan. Did anyone else? I bet nobody else. You better tell everyone what Head to Head is. I bet nobody watched it.
Well, basically, it was an early version of competitive Let's Plays, where two kids were invited to a studio set. Sat in front of a big brain, I think, or
they
something like that.
They sat across each other over a giant brain that evolved.
And then played against each other on NBA Jam and FIFA Football and such.
Any head-to-head player mode. So I just thought playing against people on a two-player mode is just the best fun. Actually, if they did bring back a TV show, it should be head-to-head. And I got the idea away with the Children's Channel, another obscure satellite channel. Obscure satellite channels were the best. And luckily, the producer at that channel was like a complete visionary. And he had the idea of the giant brain and you would sit across it. And it was very cheaply made. It was only each TV show was 5 minutes long. And it was just one round of a game. So we just found all the games. And they were like they were SNES, weren't they? They were SNES, 16-bit games, SNES and Mega Drive games.
Yeah, things like Rock and Roll Racing.
Anything that was two-player mode. Yeah. And we just start the game up and say, go. And they play, and then the winner would stay on, and then the loser would move off, and the next time we had a round, the next person would be in. But a five-minute TV show, I mean, that was predicting YouTube, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah. Totally visionary, yeah.
Sorry, what was the question?
I don't know. Going off on a total tangent.
Do I remember it? Yes, I remember.
Didn't Andy Crane also present on the Children's Channel or something? I have a vague memory of that.
CBBC.
Oh, is it CBC?
No, Broom Cupboard, okay. Yeah.
Different
guy,
sorry. My memory failed me on that one.
I think he does the weather now on Meridian.
Meridian.
Meridian, not Meridian. He's not in Meridian.
That was for Paul Rose, though. Sorry, next question.
Any more questions?
Any more
about
from
head
the
head?
Floor?
Do you think that Bad Influence was commissioned because TV companies were feeling over is playing computer games and need to do something and then take it more seriously as it went on? Or did somebody in the company go, we need to make a show like this because this is becoming such a big thing?
No, I think TV shows have, all, from my experience, have always been made in the background culture of no one in television wants a video game show. They think it's niche, they don't think it makes good viewing, and anyway, most people who work in mainstream media are kind of, or were like kind of arts graduates and not really interested in the technical side of things. That's a big generalisation, but that's just been how I've come across it. And the reason that Bad Influence got away was because of a guy called Patrick Titley, who was the guy who had the idea, I think, and the executive producer. And he had made a show, a computer show, called BBC Micro Live. Yeah. So he was behind Micro Live with Carol. Was Carol Vorderman in that? I think.
Sure. Was that How To?
No, she was in How To, but I think. Anyway, he did this show called Micro Live, all about computers, and, you know, he was, I think he'd been a former maths teacher, he was into computers and he was into technology, and I don't quite know how he got away with the commissioners, because it isn't naturally the sort of thing that people would do, but I guess he sort of sold it as a Tomorrow's World for kids. That's how we saw it, and that's how we tried to do it. So it was his vision, really. Mm.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Tim? Anything about cycling? We are in the capital of cycling. Cambridge, yes.
Yeah,
look out the window, there's millions of people riding past.
That's a student, that doesn't count, does it?
Would you prefer if they were riding around on their asses?
Can we talk about Finnish teletext again?
Tervetuloa.
Oh yeah, that means restaurant, is it? Restaurant?
I've no idea. I just made a word up.
The real Finnish girl, I remember seeing that all over the place.
Tell us more about this book that had teletext references in it. I'm expecting...
For the benefit of the tape, Mr. Biffo is looking anxious at the back.
Yeah, I'm expecting...
Oh, you need a wait. Here,
oh, good, we can ask
strike
it then.
That from the record.
We can ask it then. Tell us more about the book that referenced teletext.
I'd like to somehow spin this out into a more elaborate anecdote than I did earlier, but the reality was that was kind of it. It was the inspiration, though, and I was completely inspired, really, to kind of get off my arse and try and do this thing because of my pent-up loathing of the people who fired me at teletext. Actually, to be fair, they fired me pretty much totally justifiably. But no, well, you know, no. I'd like to say there was chapters called, like, you know, sort of my teletext hell or my teletext heaven or something. But they kind of, yeah, they kind of weren't really. Yeah.
Said too much.
No, well, okay, yeah, okay. So that's it.
You've said enough, Tim. That's enough.
Teletext were bad, okay.
And that's it. Live
on one later.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Oh. So, any more questions for anybody? For Carl and Di. Someone might have had a question at the back earlier.
There was
earlier.
A question over there earlier. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Take us back to Carl and Di.
That's fine. That's fine.
Just having this conversation just made me think, I'm sure I saw you on another show in the late 90s, something like Game Box or Game Pad.
That was, yeah, that was Gamepad, yeah. Gamepad, right. Yeah, so I did make quite a few TV shows other than Bad Influence. So a whole load of them were on the children's channel. So apart from Head to Head, I did a series called Cheat Flash, which was ridiculous, and I'm glad nobody saw it, but it was a laugh. And that was a two-minute TV show. And made sort of the A to Z and Z to A of video games. All this sort of stuff went off on kind of like obscure satellite channels. But, and one of the obscure satellite channels I did a bit later on was in the 2000s, I got invited to present GameSpot TV, and that was just to present it. It was just for GameSpot on Bravo, and it didn't go too well, and no one was particularly happy with the content. And so instead of doing the GameSpot version, I started another company and did my own version, which was called Gamepad, and we made Gamepad 2. We reversioned GameSpot to make it into Gamepad. That was on Bravo. And then we did Gamepad 2, Gamepad 3, Gamepad 4, and then we'd done enough. But it was quite interesting because we got to do jumping over. I'd done 16-bit consoles, beginning of what we called the super consoles, PlayStation original and I guess the Saturn, was it? God, it feels like so long ago. It was. And then, of course, I sort of jumped over the Dreamcast, really sadly. And then, of course, GameSpot and Gamepad, that became the first Xbox and I guess PS2 and all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of like very strange doing TV show on Bravo with this whole next generation of consoles. And to be honest, I haven't really played that many games since I stopped doing that, so I've missed out on the current generation to a great extent. I do need a new TV show.
Well, I think we were talking about on demand earlier, how things are going on demand, and I think that comes back to the central message about teletext, that teletext was on demand for everybody, and they could call it up whenever they wanted. And I think we should all be toasting Marco Polo, because without that satellite, you wouldn't have as much presence as you do now. So it's amazing, really. Everyone remembers the square aerial, but no one remembers what was on the telly at the time. I certainly weren't rich enough myself. It was a broken leg of lamb at Sunday dinner for me, so I couldn't afford a square aerial, but yeah. It
wasn't just you. I don't think we had many viewers at all, because I'm pretty sure that we'd have really amazing competition prizes and only three people would enter. I mean, your chances of getting a mountain bike that week were very high if you wrote in.
Yeah, so if you had the square aerial, you'd have a mountain bike, you'd have a car, speedboat and everything. Yeah, it'd be brilliant. And it'd be really good. And you'd be able to watch yourself on telly as well, probably. Excellent.
Okay, then, is it time for another break, do you think, guys? What do you think, Carl?
Yeah.
We'll take a break,
yeah.
And then we'll reconvene here, say, in 1 hour, and do the artist panel. We might combine both artist panels into one. Previously, we advertised there would be two, but we may end up combining them into one. But first, I think we should go for a break, get something to eat, and then by the time we get back, there might be a few more people here.
So, thank you very much to our esteemed guests, Viola Berlin.
Yes. Cheers. And Mr. Hares, Tim Moore.
Mr. Hares, ladies and gentlemen.
We're glad that you managed the whole podcast there, because we thought you had to run off with great urgency.
That's just how I roll.
Sorry?
I was going to sound even better the second time.
He's got his donkey parked up outside. It's warming up. It's ready to go.
He's parked his ass. All right, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Get something to eat.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.